Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along today. You know, it doesn't look too much like spring out there. There's still a lot of snow on the ground across most of Wisconsin. But you know what? There's things that we can do right now in the outdoors and to get kind of ready for spring. And there's also a lot, I think, of thinking and planning that we can do. Jeff Epping, he's a great planner, and he's also director of horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. It's great to have him back to talk with you and with me about kind of getting ready for spring and recovering maybe from the drought and winter. Really look forward to talking to him today and finding out what he's got to say. And certainly you may have a question or two for him. Maybe it's about your flowers. Maybe it's about trees, maybe, you know, lots of things we can talk about with him. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there or even a great photo. And Jeff Epping, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
I just have to say, in passing, we had a very enjoyable time. Was it last Saturday night at Olbrich? A nice wine and chocolate event.
Indulgence, I believe it's called. Right?
Indulgence. Yeah, it was a great name. Yeah, it's a great indulgence, and those are. I mean, I guess that's one way that botanical gardens like Olbrich, get a little helping hand financially.
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a lot of special events that help fund what we do, you know, day in and day out at the garden. Of course, we're not for profit, so all that money goes back into the program. In fact, there's another event coming up in the conservatory called Cocktails in the Conservatory, and that's on March 22nd. So if you weren't able to get to the first one, it's pretty cool because you get to see the beautiful landscape lighting in the conservatory, which not a lot of people are able to do. So it's a nice, fun event.
It definitely is. Well, here we are kind of hoping for spring eventually, I guess.
Every time it seems to warm up, it plummets right back down again.
Yeah, and lots of snow has fallen, which probably is a good thing, I think, you know, because we needed the moisture.
Absolutely. You know, last year was, one of the worst years ever I can remember as a gardener. With that very, very early heat. I mean, plants were out and running probably, 4 to 6 weeks ahead of schedule. And then we were hit with that drought, which we're seeing evidence of already. I mean, you know, we saw it last year, and I can see a lot of dead plants, particularly arborvitae, around town sitting in the ground, turned brown already before spring even hits us. So that was a tough stretch. So this year will be a bit of a challenge to kind of get your gardens back, you know, up and running again and healthy, and hopefully with the snow and some regular, you know, spring rains and some through the summer, we'll be in much better shape.
Yeah, well, I hope that that's, I was trying to remember if the first big snow came before the heaviest frost, or the heaviest freeze, rather. So we don't have such a deep frost.
I think that's probably true, yeah. Good. You know, and just even a month ago, we had a couple inches of rain in that warm stretch, but you know, unfortunately, I think the majority of that, you know, ran off to the local, you know, the nearest water table. So, but hopefully, spring will bring better things. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Keep our fingers crossed. Yeah. All right. By the way, I'm going to give that number again. If you'd like to join in, you have a question for Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, on this edition of Garden Talk, call us 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. And what should we be doing now to get the garden or the outdoors ready for spring?
Well, at this point, you know, we've been busy out protecting our plants from these heavy snows, to be honest with you. When we get a heavy snow, we've had about three now, two in particular earlier on, which were quite damaging to plants if you didn't get out there and brush them off, even as the snow's fallen or shortly thereafter. The first snowfall we had, which was particularly bad, we had all that wet, heavy snow, which, you know, really caused some weight limitations on some of those plants. Some of the plants cracked or were leaning over, again, arborvitae, Japanese yew, the evergreens that were especially hit hard. But I even saw it on birch and such. And after we had that snow, then the temperatures plummeted at night and yeah. down into the single digits or close to it the next yeah. day. And that snow then freezes right onto the branches. So when you go out there to knock it off, sometimes you do a little more damage than you'd like to. So the best, you know, the best way to deal with that is to get it off as soon as possible. Even like I say, when the garden, we were out there several times that day, knocking off, but we still suffered some pretty severe damage. There's arborvitae that are literally, busted up to the ground. We'll have to replace them. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, we have actually, we do not have arborvitae in our lawn, but our neighbors do, and uh-huh. they were bent over, way over, some of them onto our lawn. Or, you know, I want to help the neighbors out, so we got out there right away and knocked it off.
But. Right, right. Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, it's one of our fastest growing, you know, native plants that we have in yeah. the landscape. And so there's lots of them around because they make a great, you know, solid screen or hedge rather than putting up a fence, you know.
Yep.
And so, you know, a lot of people have asked me, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to replace yours with? And I said, we'll replace them with arborvitae because they're still a great plant. And one of the things that we did learn from this event was that there are particular cultivars out there and species that were very resistant to the damage. And so that, you know, we learned something from it. And we can mention those, you know, today. So, you know, it's still fast growing, still a relatively inexpensive plant to put in the ground. So we'll select a little more resistant cultivars because I have a feeling this sort of global warming trend we're in, you know, we might see a lot of this type of weather yeah. in the future. And so might as well plan ahead a little bit for it.
Anne in Milwaukee has a question for you. Let's go to her. Hi, Anne. Thank you very much for calling.
Well, thanks. I have two columnar apple trees that are 6 years old. And when I planted them, I didn't really know how to follow up on the pruning. Now, one tree has four trunks and the other tree has two trunks.
Oh.
And in 2011, I got two apples. And last year, nothing. So I want to know if I should prune them down to one trunk each.
Well, I don't know that that's going to help with your. I mean, if you're more worried about the fruit set and apple production, that's probably not what's causing the issue there. You know, last year we had a late frost, which remember was very damaging to orchards all over the state. And they didn't have much fruit production at all last season. So that might have been a part of the reason. You know, young fruit trees oftentimes when you put them in take a number of years. So 4 years is not unusual for an apple tree to really start to produce.
Yeah, well, these are 6 years old.
Okay. You know, and it all depends on where they're at and what size they went in the ground yeah. and such. But with that said, I mean, it's your pruning is oftentimes you want to prune for structural reasons to make your plant stronger, get out all those narrow, weak crotch angles that can break off when we have heavy snow or rain or ice, I should say. But as far as pruning for fruit production, you know, you want to open up the plant a little bit so the fruiting spurs are exposed to higher light levels, which should produce bigger fruit. Mm-hmm. A number of cultivars a lot of fruit trees benefit from cross-pollination. So I don't know if you have a couple different cultivars or all the same.
The two, they're the two red apple trees of the columnar mm-hmm. apple tree type. Now, will they produce with these several trunks?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, well, then that's not a problem for me.
No,
well,
it shouldn't be.
Although you do want to, as Jeff said, you do want to kind of thin out so that the branches, the leaves get light.
Right, right. It's
they're wide open. There's okay. That's no problem.
Okay, well that's good. You know, and some of the people often tend to over prune at times too, or don't really understand how to prune properly, and they end up sort of just lopping the end of every branch off, which isn't really the proper way to prune much of anything. And in the process, they stimulate a lot of new growth and juvenility in the plant, which then keeps the plant from flowering heavily, you know, in the following year, maybe for a number of years after. So, you know, if you can take a pruning class at your local extension or our garden center, I know we have pruning class at Olbrich coming up on March 23rd, if you can make it into town. But, you know, pruning is seems simple, but it's actually a pretty complicated thing. But once you know what you're doing, Yep. You can really do some nice work for yourself in your garden.
Absolutely. Good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's turn to Melissa in Menominee Falls. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I'm sort of new to keeping plants, so forgive me if my questions seem a little silly.
No, not
my
at all.
My husband got me a beautiful rose bush for Valentine's Day that I have just came pretty close to killing in the 2 weeks that I've had it. And I'm following the directions, and I'm watering, and I don't know what to do. I feel bad. It's so beautiful, and it's dying.
Well, the roses that are sold around Valentine's Day, really, the majority are meant to, as just a pot crop. So, like you would buy, a flowering house plant. You know, they're good when they're in bloom, and if you can keep them alive after that, you're probably doing pretty good. So, I wouldn't be too hard on yourself. You know, most of the varieties of roses that we plant in our garden are much hardier types, much more vigorous, you know, large growing, whether they be hybrid tea or shrub roses or climbers or whatever, they're much better adapted to our conditions. And I would venture to guess the one that you got is not one of those. I'm sure it was beautiful at the time, and it has some sentimental value. So certainly if you can put it in a south-facing window, and just don't overstimulate it with lots of fertilizer. Just kind of keep it hanging on until spring, and then, you know, plant it in a nice sunny location in your garden. And if you get more flowers off it, you'll be doing good.
Unfortunately, I live in an apartment, so I don't think I'll be able to plant it anywhere. Should I just get a bigger planter for it and put it out maybe like on the deck or?
Sure, you could pot it up and put it in with, you know, if you have annuals out there, vegetables on your balcony or patio, you can add that as well. So roses are a little tricky, to be quite honest. As a new gardener, they wouldn't be the first thing I would recommend. But that's okay. That'll be a good challenge for you. There's
Absolutely.
Lots of other good plants out there.
Thanks,
okay.
Melissa.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Glenn in Wausau. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Great show.
Thank you.
Well, I have another pruning question.
Okay.
This time with blueberries.
Okay.
Okay.
You know,
I've not done real well with blueberries. I've had some of my plants are maybe 6 or 7 years old, and I've never, they didn't start producing until I put, you know, 16 inches of rotted wood chips and wood sawdust on them. Okay, now they start to produce them, but, you know, I've never pruned them.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I prune those? Now some of them are like 7 years old.
And how are they doing otherwise? I mean, you know, plants don't necessarily have to be pruned very often if they're, you know, some plants are slower growing and such. But, you know, if they're doing well, don't feel like you have to go out there and prune, you know, or over prune every year. But otherwise, they're producing fruit for you well and all?
Well, just really, last year was my first year. I had one plant where I got a couple of handfuls off of.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the rest of them are just, I think that the sawdust really helped a lot. Mm-hmm. In mulching them.
Right.
And but some of these older plants are pretty, have a lot of, they've never been pruned in like 7 years or so.
Okay.
Do I do it like an apple tree and clear out the middle a little bit?
Well, basically on suckering shrubs, what we're doing is we're pruning out the biggest, heaviest canes, about a quarter of them every year. What that does is stimulates new growth from the base. So say over a 4 year period, then, every cane that you have on that plant is 4 years or younger, which keeps that plant vigorous and stimulated and growing and flowering and fruiting well. So depending on how vigorously they're growing, you know, you could do a quarter, you could do an eighth, you know, whatever seems appropriate when you look at the plant. It's kind of hard to say otherwise. But, you know, in our neck of the woods here in Madison, our soils are so heavily alkaline, you know, we're pulling our water out of limestone bedrock and all that, you know, blueberries are a bit of a challenge here. You really have to mend the soils and add sulfur and all those things. So you're in a much better state up there in Wausau, of course. So
you might want to still get a soil test.
They prefer acid soil, as you probably know. And you mentioned that you're putting wood shavings or that sort of sawdust. You have to be a little careful with that because any wood product is very high in carbon, and there's a carbon to nitrogen ratio that, you know, you want to maintain in the soil. Basically, if you work that if you, be careful just to put it on the top and don't work it into the soil, because when you do that, the microorganisms that break down the sawdust tie up all the nitrogen in the soil, and there isn't any available for the plant. So they'll you'll typically see that the plants are sort of starving or kind of getting chlorotic or yellow when they don't have enough fertilizer. So like Larry said, the soil test is always a good idea to kind of see where you're at, you know, and adjust accordingly. And of course, when they do those, they always give you a recommendation on what to do with the soil.
You always tell them what you're growing there, and then the recommendations follow what you're growing. Good luck, Glenn. Thank you. Appreciate the call.
Thank you very much.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Our guest, Rob Ferret, our on-air producer for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Great to have him along. And again, thank you so much for listening in. Judith in Galena, Illinois, has been waiting a bit here, Jeff, so let's go to her.
All right.
Thanks, Judith, for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. Well, I've got a really good situation in a... I'll hold up in one. A friend's husband had major heart surgery a couple of years ago and can no longer tend his garden, so they have offered me the garden plot. And being an apartment dweller, this is like a major gift.
Yeah.
However, it's fairly large. I'd say it's about 25 by 35 or 40. Mm-hmm. And he's done nothing in it other than 2 years ago what he did plant. He just kind of gave up and let it all go to seed. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, weeds of every description have taken over.
Yeah.
So being a relatively old person myself and not really looking forward to a lot of backbreaking work, I'm wondering, is there any way to keep those seeds from germinating without resorting to some kind of really nasty chemical application? Somebody told me about putting heavy-duty black plastic over it and letting the sun do its job. And I just don't know what would work, but I'd really, really like to be able to get in there and do a vegetable garden.
Right, right. Well, I'm not sure what kind of weeds are in there. There's some that are a little more stubborn than others, like quack grass or Canadian thistle or something like that. But hopefully those.
Oh, he has all those.
he has a whole lot more.
Shared with everything.
Okay. Well, you know, if you want to do it organically, not use like Roundup or glyphosate, the other name for it, then, you know, the method you're talking about, the black plastic, I've had people do that. Others have laid down several sheet layers of a newspaper, say maybe six pages of newspaper, and cover the whole area, and then cover that with an organic mulch like shredded leaves or wood chips or something like that. And then, you know, you might be able to plant in that this year, or maybe better, just leave it go for one season, which may be hard to do because you're excited about planting, and I would be too.
I may not have another season.
Right. Yeah. Or just get it, you know, go out and buy or rent a rototiller and till that several times. And then, you know, you might just have to be a little more diligent with a hoe and such. You can mulch, you know, in a vegetable garden as well, especially in between the plants or in between the plant, you know, the rows and such. And, you know, maybe, you know, it seems like a fairly sizable plot. If you don't need all that space, you might be better to intensively garden a quarter or a half of it and then treat the others, you know, other areas like we were talking about, kind of fallow and mulch over them heavily so that it's not so overwhelming because, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a great idea. You know, black plastic or cover up half of it or two-thirds of it and garden on the other. You might also check out something. You mentioned that you're getting up there a little bit too. One of the types of gardening that for vegetables that's really taken on popularity is what's called square foot gardening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you might, I just had a show on square foot gardening not too long, you know, about a week or two ago. And it was a great show with the guy who invented it. And you might just go online and just check out square foot gardening because it's, in many ways it's an easier way to, much easier way to garden.
Mm-hmm.
And you could begin right away on, you know, pretty much right on top of what you got there, if, assuming you've covered it with newspaper or whatever.
Right, right. No, that's a great idea because, you know, I think a lot of times people don't garden very intensively. I mean, if you really do some planting and, you know, you get your spring crops in and as they're going down, you're replacing them with summer crops and then fall. And you can really produce a lot of produce off of a relatively small area if you use the square foot gardening method, which Larry's talking about.
Yep.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's worth looking into, Judith. Thanks for...
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the ideas.
Yeah, good
thanks
luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Jeff in Sparta. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I got... now that I heard the guy that had questions about the blueberries, now I got two questions. first question is I've got about 10, 12 years ago, I took a stick of willow and I shoved it in the ground and lo and behold, it grew. and it's now it's probably about a foot in diameter at chest height.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm worried about is in the last year, I noticed this is kind of next to my garden and I noticed that part of my garden kind of starved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm guessing that this tree is sucking down all the nutrient. So I thought, no problem. I'll just turn that back into lawn and let the tree go.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is, though, is that it's going the other way towards my septic grain field.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is this going to be an invasive problem for me?
Well, I think it would be a problem with any tree of the size of a willow or it be a maple or whatever it is.
Okay.
If it has a nice root run of moist soil, those roots are going to grow there,
yeah.
And they're going to want to use that moisture. And the only thing I could say is if you wanted to keep the tree, maybe rent a trencher. You know, they rent these out at locals and trench between the trunk or, you know, not real close to the trunk, but the drip line of the tree and the septic field maybe every year if it's worth it to you, you know.
Sure.
That might be one way to kind of have your cake and eat it too, so to speak.
Well, that was going to be a second part of that question, is can I root prune it that way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah.
At the drip line. It's not, the drip line is not to the septic yet, but it will be in a few years.
Yeah, yeah. I think once you establish that line, I would just trench on that line every year.
Yep.
I wouldn't move that around, you know. So,
no.
So pick whatever's good. It's better to do it early on in the tree's life, because then the root system that you don't sever, those will, you know, put out some extra roots and sort of adapt and take up the extra nutrients or water that the other roots won't be able to.
I never thought in the world it'd grow. It was just a stick that my sister gave me. And I literally shoved it in the grass.
Absolutely. I know what you're talking about.
Oh.
Crazy. My other question now is on the blueberries. I also have some blueberries planted that are near the drain field as well, actually closer.
Mm-hmm.
And will those become a problem? And part two of that question is mine are 6 or 7 years old and they did real good at first. And then I took one of them out and I noticed it was real root bound.
Mm.
And so I'm considering ripping that one completely and letting the other two, but will the roots on those also be the same problem for me?
I don't really think they should be an issue. You know, the root system on a blueberry or most shrubs are very relatively shallow, you know, 18 inches deep at most, and I just don't see them being a problem.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right, well, good luck. You bet.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Justin in Madison, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I have a indoor hydroponic question. I grow salad mix, spinach, and things inside in the winter. And basically, I've done it for about the past 3 years, and this year I've started to experience some sort of rotting on the bottom leaves of the plants, and the roots are kind of starting to lose their, you know, nice, crisp, clean, white look and get a little bit brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't know if there was something in the water that I could, that's like new around Madison, because it's been strange that I basically use the same exact system that I have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ebb and flow system with hanging net pods, and it mm-hmm. has worked real fine in the past, but now I'm just getting this die-off from the bottom during the vegetative state, and I was just curious if there were any nutrients. I'm just using a pretty basic NPK formula right now, and I was wondering if there's anything else or an additive that I could add to my reservoir which would assist in keeping these roots a little cleaner and maybe help assist that die-off from not happening.
Right.
I went to my local garden shop and kind of told them about the problem, and they recommended a product, but it was about $120 a gallon, so it just made it unreasonable to grow salad mix without spending that much money.
Right, so, right. And I assume you're doing this all organically. You're not using any fungus. Yeah, right. So I think, you know, I'll be honest. I'm no expert on hydroponic growing, but I do know from my past life as a propagator that, you know, every so often cleaning house and starting out anew is a big deal. So what I might do is just, you know, really to just dismantle your whole system, clean everything out. I assume you might have a lot of lime buildup because our soils are our water is so heavy in calcium that you often get that. And then, you know, sterilize everything with a 10% bleach solution and just, you know, and start all over again, so to speak. And as far as something being in the water now that it wasn't before, I'm not aware of that, I'll be honest.
No.
You know,
something
there's always
snuck in there.
Yeah, I know with houseplants, you know, we always recommend, you know, when you water thoroughly because, again, calcium and fluoride and all those things are in your water. So you want to keep flushing your soil mix, you know, to get those soluble salts out, which can, cause some toxicity problems and, you know, browning of leaf tips and stuff like that. But as far as hydroponically, yeah, that's a whole nother world. But, you know, I just think that might be the way to go. And I'd swab down the whole room, you know, and sterilize everything. And that way, at least, you know, that factor's, you know, taken out of it and get some fresh seed and start over again.
There you go.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot for calling. That was exactly what I had in my mind.
Oh, good.
Well, you're the expert. I guess I said that because I thought, all right. I had the right idea here. I'm agreeing with the.
Well, you know, when you want to do things organically, which of course we do and everybody does, you know, really there's sometimes that's the best option, you know.
Yep. Clean, start all over. Kind of.
Yeah.
Terry in Green Bay. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good morning. This is a question I have on controlling invasive plants, the use of Roundup on the stump. A few months ago, you had a guest on Garden Talk, and he made the statement that you can do this in the winter. Aren't they in full dormancy now, and they wouldn't pull it down to the roots? I know you can do it in fall. It's a good time, but isn't winter kind of like too late?
That's good. You know, We don't do any of that at the garden, to be honest with you. Most of the time, we just grub things out. If it's a larger tree, we'll stump grind it. But I know there's not only Roundup, but there's other products out there. They basically call them brush killer, and they might have Garlon or Tordon or some types of fairly, you know, heavy duty herbicides to take care of that thing. I have heard of mixing actually diesel fuel with the Roundup, and because it's oily and it keeps that compound it keeps it on the stump until growth ensues in spring. But, you know, that's I'm not an expert on that. I'll be quite honest with you. I would guess if you get online and type something like that in a search, you're going to find all sorts of sources of information, but, you know, kind of weigh those out and see what might.
I'm trying to remember that, because typically on something like a Roundup, you don't apply it below a certain temperature.
That's what I was saying. I know that they would, because you typically mix it with water, so
right,
it would freeze. And
yeah,
that was the idea behind mixing it with something oily that would not freeze.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
But this you do straight, though. This you should use straight, you know, because you're going to put it right on the stump. You don't dilute it with water.
Yeah,
you know, put it in like a little liquid, you know,
right,
empty detergent.
Right. Well, of course, when you buy those products, they have very, very technical literature on exactly how to use them. In fact, to use them legally, you should follow the directions. So I'm guessing you might find something on there, and if it's not extensive, go online, because those products list you know, their MSD sheets and all that online, that you can really look into it and see what they recommend, because that's really how you should use those products anyway, how they're recommended, not sort of, you know, how we think they might work better if we put, make them more potent or put more on or that sort of thing. And that's when we run into problems.
Yeah, there you go. Terry, thank you. Appreciate your call. By the way, you can join in, too, if you have a question for our guest today, Jeff Epping, as we visit with him, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens, Larry Mueller here. The number for you to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. John in Sparta up next with a question. So let's go to John. Hi, John.
Good morning. Say, I grafted some apple trees a few years back. They're roughly 4 years old on down. Mm-hmm. And they're all coming around real well. And now I have problems with rabbits. I didn't notice it. I didn't have cages around them.
Mm-hmm.
And they chewed the bark off all of them. And some of them are, you know, completely around the stump, but some aren't all the way. And I'm just wondering if I should treat them or if they'll heal on themselves or...
Well, typically when the cambium, which is the live tissue that makes up the, you know, it's very evident on a young tree, that's basically all that live outer growth, which would be considered the bark sort of later. Once that's chewed off down to the white, you know, fibrous wood, it's done. It won't heal around. Now, if it's a half or so, or maybe even a quarter of that cambium left, it can, you know, form callus tissue and heal itself. I guess what I might do is, I'm not sure at what level they chewed those off, but if it's above your graft union, John, and there's some viable buds still there, mm-hmm. you cut them back to that point. Mm-hmm. I would wait till spring, see what happens, because when you have that kind of type of girdling, more times than not, you will get new shoots coming up from either the rootstock or the scion, which you grafted on, of course, is the plant that you want. And if it's on that scion wood, just clip them off and let a new leader establish. Being young plants like that, it shouldn't, you know, take too long to straighten, you know, the trunks to straighten up and that sort of thing. And then in the future, yeah, the only thing you can really do is put a nice sort of hardware cloth, you know, even mm-hmm. the smaller mesh, not even as chicken wire or whatever, you know, that you use, that might be even too big for voles to get in. Because we've had that issue at the garden where voles work their way around and eat all the bark off of trees or shrubs underneath the snow. Can't even see them. When the snow melts, then, oh my gosh, look what happened, and it's too late. On a bigger tree, when they strip all the cambium off, we just tear it out and start over because there's no way to recover. But in your situation, you might be okay if they didn't go all the way down to that rootstock.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Reggie in Chippewa Falls, what's on your mind?
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem in my backyard. I have a lot of trees giving me a lot of shade, mm-hmm. and I like my trees, so I don't want to get rid of my trees. And I can't get grass to grow there. I've tried putting like high, like shade grass.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. also I have a lot of kids, like my neighbor kids and my kids play out there. So it's high traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I wanted to try and do is maybe plant moss back there. But I didn't know if there's a specific type of moss that would be better, or do they sell moss anywhere? Or is this something that you think would even work?
Well, typically moss will start to grow in
on
that space
own.
In that on its own, and a lot of people will have moss growing with a few blades of grass, and they'll always be, how do I kill the moss, you know, to say so that I can get the grass to grow? It's like, well, the grass isn't going to grow, the moss is growing because it can. But generally moss, you know, will like a little bit more moisture. It doesn't want to dry out, you know, during, you know, droughty periods. So the best thing to do if you want to get that started, though, I would say, is I assume if your kids are playing in there and you're walking through that space, you're going to have a path that you need.
It's not going to take any traffic at all.
Exactly. So I would establish either a wood chip path or a flagstone or some type of permanent path that will guide the, you know, people in and out of the space so that you'll give that moss a chance to grow and establish. Because like Larry said, it can't take any type of wear and tear like grass would. if you have moss growing on your property in shady areas and such, you can take little chunks of it and embed it into that space that you're talking about. You'll put it right on top of the bare soil, and then you'll have to, you know, water it a little bit, and especially during dry periods. But, you know, Janesville Rotary Garden, which is, you know, not far here from Madison, has a wonderful little moss garden that you might want to visit this this spring. And you can always quiz Mark Dwyer, the director of horticulture there. I know he does a blog, and he's very active with lectures. In fact, I think he lectured at Olbrich a couple of days ago. And he gives a talk on moss gardening. So do a little research that way. But a lot of it has to do with, you know, that moisture condition and the traffic. And but I like your idea. You know, there are, you know, there are perennials that will be much more shade tolerant than grass would, too. If you want to, once you establish that path, and you want to maybe do something with the moss, like hosta or
right, and I do have a lot of hostas around. I just wanted like the main, my short little area to have something. Okay, so you think maybe research Mark Dwyer and pick his brain. And you said he worked at Janesville Rotary Garden.
Yep, Janesville Rotary Garden, just down the road, about 45 minutes south of Madison, and. Okay.
Yeah, beautiful garden.
Great garden. Great garden. Yep.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff Epping, our guest today, Director of Horticulture at Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And so happy to have you listening in today. And if you would like to join in the conversation, all our lines are filled right now, but the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Andrew in Boscobel emailed us, by the way, and wondered if you'd discuss general guidelines for pruning hardwoods like walnut or the oaks and cherry. They've been planted periodically, bare root over the last 20 years. So sounds like Andrew may have a nice little forest
project on his hands. Yeah. It sounds like. Well, you know, depending on how you want to, you know, if those plants are for ornamental or for, you know, wood production purposes, or you might prune them a little differently. But generally, you know, I'm a big believer in pruning plants at an early age. You know, start out, establish a good framework for the plant, usually trying to keep a good central leader, you know, a straight trunk, and then everything radiating off from that. First of all, taking out any diseased or insect, you know, branches that have been damaged by insects, take those out first, any crossing branches, any broken branches, and then any branches that would sort of shade each other out as you go. And so you want to just, you know, create a good framework both radially and laterally up and down the plant. And, you know, it's like I say, it's kind of complex to just kind of discuss because all plants grow differently. And that's one thing I'll tell you about pruning is understand what your plant wants to do. I mean, what is its natural growth form? Work with that rather than against it. You know, you don't want to keep a hawthorn or a pagoda dogwood, which is a very wide-spreading tree, within a four-foot space or something, and you keep hacking away at the end. So if you know what your plant wants to do and work with that, that goes a long way. But really, I think, you know, for somebody to really tackle this, I think, you know, a good workshop as well is worth its weight in gold. You know, you can do a lot of reading as well, but, you know, working with somebody, in a workshop situation, like I say, we do this a couple every spring at Olbrich, and, people really get a lot out of it. You know, we do a little class room time in the beginning, and then we go out on site in the garden and really look at all these different plants and different techniques and how they grow. And it really, puts it all together and makes you understand what's going on rather than, you know, the old adage, prune with a purpose, you know, it goes a long way.
Absolutely.
Know what you want to do before you go out there and start cutting away.
Although, you know, for oaks, you know, you don't want to go a whole lot. Well, I mean, now it's fine for oaks, but I wouldn't be pruning, what is it? March, in the March.
Yeah, that's true. You know, oaks and elms have their own particular, you know, issues with oak wilt and Dutch elm disease. And so you prune those when they're fully dormant. And There's, you know, a couple plants like that that you want to bone up on. But, yeah, and some plants don't require a lot of pruning. You know, oaks in general really don't.
No.
They're slower growing and well-behaved, and, well, there's other plants that just grow like crazy teenagers, and you got to keep them reined in. So, you know, again, if you know what it wants to do, it makes it. And visiting your local botanic garden, arboretum, you know, some place that has those trees so you can see them. And see them well pruned, it goes a long way.
Absolutely.
So come on to Olbrich.
Come to Olbrich. And actually, and you can go online first. You got a website. I'm just looking at my Facebook page. We got a link to it on my Facebook page, but it's Olbrich Botanical Gardens in Madison.
And Olbrich.org. And we have all the events on there. We have the whole class list, you know, through the whole winter months into spring. Wide variety of gardening topics that are taught by, you know, staff at Olbrich and experts in the field from all over the state. So it's, there's some good stuff there.
Liz in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning, guys. Thank you so much for having Garden Talk going.
Sure.
I got a question for you. I've got some dahlia tubers, and I've got 50 of them started, but then I was thinking, I've got them in moist dirt, and it's about 68-70 degrees. Do they need light to kick in the root growth, or just warmth? Because my windows are pretty much full with the green stuff already.
50, that's a lot. you might consider some grow lights if you don't have the space. But to get going, they don't need light. You're going to have them buried in your soil mix, you know, a few inches deep, so light wouldn't even penetrate. You're right. The heat is much more important. Don't overwater them, because you might encourage, you know, fungal organisms to grow and rot the tubers before they get going. Once the shoots emerge, they'll probably root in a little bit first. Shoots will start to come up through the soil. Then you need to have light to them, and the more intense, the better, because, you know, dahlias are full sun plants. And if you're doing them under like fluorescent lighting, or now they actually have LED grow lights, which are even better.
We have them.
Yeah,
at home.
They're great. And so much more energy efficient. But those, you know, get them on right away and give them what they need, and they'll perform well for you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a greenhouse that's going to be going up on my deck here pretty soon. I'm trying to time it, but I thought, oh my gosh. do you have time for one more quick question?
Sure.
Okay. I have some arborvitae that were planted, I would say about 35, 40 years ago on the south side of my house. Mm-hmm. The problem being now is they're about 6 to 8 inches in diameter, and they're only less than 5 feet from my foundation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's common.
I think I'm going to be doing a little bit of logging this spring. How far down do I need to go to get the roots out of the way?
Well, the good news about arborvitae is they have a very fibrous root system, and they're very easy to transplant because of that, and they're compact. But on very old trees, you know, they're still going to be down a couple of feet probably. If you can hire, you do the bulk of the work, leave a stump sticking up about 2 feet out of the ground so they can hook on with a bobcat or tractor. Yeah. It'd be well worth the money hire somebody to tear those out for you, I think, because they'll be tough.
I can speak from experience on that one, too. I wholeheartedly agree with Jeff on that.
Okay, well, I got the chainsaw, but I don't have the stump remover, but I think I could probably do a spaghetti feed for some guys I know.
Sounds like a plan.
That's a great payment.
Oh, thank you so much, guys, and hooray, spring is around the corner.
It is. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Liz. Yeah, we got some of those new LED grow lights for, my lime tree was looking a little, it was okay, but. Man, we got some of those LED grow lights and put them on, and suddenly my lime tree looks a lot happier. happier.
They're pretty cool. I mean, you look at them, they're sort of a funky range of colors to the human eye.
Yeah.
But they're, of course, not geared for us. They're geared for plant growth. And
I kind of like it. I think they're kind of cool lights. I like the way they look. Oh, man. Ken and Kakana, on to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thank you for having your program.
Sure.
I have a white pine that I've had for about 10 years, and last fall all the needles turned brown. I watered it. Even with the high winds we've had, I would say maybe 50% of the needles have blown off. My question has to do with whether you think I can save it in the spring.
Oh, well, that's a, you know, and that's a good question. It's one of the things I wanted to talk about today is that, you know, because of that drought, we're going to have to give our plants a little TLC next spring. And I think the best thing you can do right off the bat is, you know, to give them some mulch. You know, in the case of a white pine in your area, you know, the best mulch is probably white pine needles. But farther down this way, leaf mulch, you know, using shredded leaves. That's what we use at the garden, and it's a great organic matter that holds the moisture in the ground. Once you get it there, cools the soil, which the roots prefer, keeps the weeds down, you know, so that's better for the gardener. But, you know, getting a decent mulch on your plantings to preserve any amount of moisture that's there. And then I would make sure that you soak your plants in good early on. And a very slow sort of soaker hose or something like that would be the best. Especially on evergreen material. And how much, you know, everybody says, how long do you leave it on and this and that? Well, get out a good spade and dig down, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 inches and see what you got. That's the only way you're going to know. And water, and then, you know, wait till the next day, check it. If it's enough, great. If it's not, water a little more. The majority of a root system of any tree or shrub is going to be in that top 12 inches of soil anyway. So you don't have to water, you know, to the point where you think you're going down 3 feet. That isn't where all those feeder roots are. So, and then, you know, just take care of all your plants best you can. And hopefully, like I say, well, you know, the spring rains will come and we'll get regular rains. But this is going to be a tough season on a lot of plants, and getting, you know, squared away in spring and giving them the best that they can get will go a long way to get new root growth down and make them stronger for the season to come.
Thanks.
I'm assuming that because it hung on to some of the needles that it isn't totally dead, and the branches have green to them yet.
Yep, I would agree. And if they got some nice buds on the tips of the branches, that's what's going to provide all your new growth. Yep. And of course, you know, pines and conifers in general always leaf out later. You know, they won't start producing those candles and the new growth till, you know, early June or a little later, depending where you're at. So be patient. But yeah, that is a good sign because like I was telling Larry earlier, we've seen arborvitae in Madison that are completely brown. Those are not coming back. I think you're okay.
Well, thank you very much. And Larry, you're doing a wonderful job. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it very much. Sherry on our Facebook page, sent a note and said for the caller who just asked about root problems he's having with the hydroponic plants. She recommends a resource called Imagine Aquaponics. They have a Facebook page. So Imagine Aquaponics, Facebook page with contact information. She says they really know their stuff. So
that's good. You know, in hydroponics, that's pretty specialized stuff. So that's good to have a source like that available.
Yep. Connie in Williams Bay. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about ash trees. I have three beautiful ash trees in my yard, and I've been working with an arborist, really great company, and they've been treating my ash trees. A couple of years ago, I cleared out a small section to make some new plantings, and they found an ash tree. It was about 2 inches in diameter, might be 10 to 15 feet. This ash tree is also being treated, but I'm wondering if in the long run, because it's not cheap doing the treatment every year, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if in the long run it would be a better decision for me to remove that young tree and replace it with something else.
Mm. And you're thinking, of course, of emerald ash borer, Connie.
Yes, I am, yes.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, you know, that mm-hmm. insect has not been, we haven't been able to stop its advancement one little bit. So it's here. It's actually in the Janesville area now, and I know they're testing extensively in Madison to see, you know, if it's here yet, but it'll come. And so we're all facing that same situation. And some older trees, people have chosen to treat them with systemic insecticides to protect the trees. But you're right. A young tree, I wouldn't. I don't think it's worth the investment. And, you know, who wants to use a insecticide if you don't have to? There's still lots of good alternatives out there. And I think your idea is a very good one.
Yeah.
Right, before I get too attached to it, because they're beautiful trees.
Yeah. You know, white ash especially are just such gorgeous trees. And
unfortunately, those borers, like any ash, doesn't matter.
Yep, that's right.
They'll take anyone on.
Yeah.
So, Connie, sorry, but get started with a new love. Start with a new love. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your call. We're visiting today with Jeff Epping. Jeff directs horticulture at Obrick Botanical Gardens in Madison. He's been a regular guest on our show for a long, long time. It's always a great pleasure to have him with us here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller, and tell you what, got a great guest today on this edition of Garden Talk, Jeff Epping, Director of Horticulture at Obrick Botanical Gardens in Madison. Happy to have him here, and thank you for listening in. Lots of callers online. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Lines are all full right now. Sue in Bayside with us. Sue, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question about some arborvitas.
Mm-hmm.
We have several of them about 15 feet tall on the south end of our home, and with the heavy snow, they have all drooped down to the ground, and I'm wondering whether they will come back automatically or whether we need to do something to help these poor babies along.
Right. No, that's a very good question, and we were faced with that, you know, when we had those heavy snows, and even though we knocked the snow off, they stayed, you know, arched, some of them to the ground. Luckily, many of them did not break. As the temperatures rose and got back above freezing for a stretch, they did come back a little bit, but still not to the point we wanted them to be. So what you can do on a day that's not below freezing or somewhere near 32 anyway, you don't want to do it when it's real cold because the tissue will actually be frozen. You can do more damage pulling them back together at that time. But when you get those temperatures up, get a hand with this because it's much easier if two people at least do it.
Yeah.
Hold those, bring them up, and tie them together. We use an organic twine. Don't use something like nylon because people forget about it. And if you leave you use wire or that nylon, they'll end up actually damaging the plant later, and isn't doing any good. So the organic materials typically will rot away after a stretch of time, a couple of years. But you pull them back in maybe several places within the interior of the tree and kind of just, you know, go around the individual trunks and pull them together gently until you get them to about where you think they should be. And then, you know, as the trees grow for the next couple seasons, those fibers will get strong and, you know, the new growth will kind of give it strength again. And then you could probably remove those or, you know, they'll rot away. Keep an eye on those, you know, 2 years down the road or something. Make sure they're not girdling the plant, you know, the plant's growing around them because that'll cause some damage too. But that's a great question. And earlier when I talked about these cultivars that we identified as being much more resistant to the damage, all are cultivars that form a good, what they call central leader, basically one trunk in the tree from an early age onward. That way, all the side branches, you know, they just kind of shed the snow and it kind of falls off. All the most damage we've seen on arborvitae, like you're talking about, cultivars like Pyramidalis and Nigra and Emerald and others that have multiple stems, and they just all splayed open, and many of them couldn't take the weight and snapped, broke, and then you're stuck. You know, then you're.
Yeah,
then
I don't think ours. Yeah, I don't think ours broke. And there's such great, you know, privacy. You know, plants.
Absolutely.
I just love them for that reason.
Oh yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So there. Yeah. If you have that situation where they're not broke, it's worth taking the time to put them back in the place and tie them up, and you know, give them a little extra care, and they'll, you know, you'll be happy for it in the end.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you so much. Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Sue. Rod in Weyerhaeuser. Hello.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. I probably call in too much. I don't know. You got a good program. I always got to say something. But he was the man before, or a couple callers back on the blueberries.
Yeah.
I used to work at a sawmill, and one time there was a breakdown, which wasn't uncommon. But anyhow, we had our job done, and so I'm walking around. I clean up around the machines, and here to sawdust, God only knows how long it was sitting around some of these machines and under the tracks. And so I started cleaning that stuff up, and I'm getting deeper and deeper. Of course, it's getting darker and darker. Well, pretty soon I got down and the stuff was just black, and it's kind of you could tell it was almost kind of sticky. And here I started finding the big white, plump white grubs, I think they're the ones turned into the June bugs.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I know my dad and a couple older farmers I talk with, they said that if you find worms and stuff like that, different critters in your ground, it's good soil, That was kind of an old figure of speech, I guess. So that's what I'm wondering. If I'm finding them white grubs in that old black rotting sawdust, is that good then to put on the blueberries, around the blueberries, and kind of mix in? You think it's broke down enough so you don't have to worry about carbon?
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah, if it's broken down to that point, you're right. It's probably broken down all it's going to be, or at least not much more. So, yeah, you'd be better off using something. Yeah, that's why we say, using composted wood chips or composted leaves rather than fresh oftentimes is better, because then they're actually releasing some of the nutrients into the soil, into the microorganisms that will then be available to your plants. So that's,
Yeah, absolutely.
Good idea.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
All right, yep. Bye-bye.
Lynn in Colgate. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about the evergreens. You spoke a little bit earlier about mulching and so forth, but I'm wondering about the color of them right now. Are they, because of the drought last year, they seem less green, more to a yellow hue, but not a dying.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure that's
Are they going to green back up, or is there a fertilizer or something that you can give them to make them green back up and not look so sickly?
Right. That's a good question. I'm not exactly evergreen is a huge group of plants. You don't know
like the white pines.
Yeah. Typically, plants will show stress when we have a severe drought like that. Or other plants, if we have a very wet season, then they don't tolerate wet conditions very well, and they'll show the same sorts of signs. But anyway, the best thing to do is, like we were talking earlier, is to try to improve the cultural conditions as much as you can to favor those plants. So, mulching, a little extra water. I'm not a big believer in fertilizing trees unless you know that you're on very infertile soils. But you probably the best are the slow release type of fertilizers that are out there. And there's lots of good organic fertilizers now. The one thing you don't want to do with any plant, be it a house plant or your plants out in your garden, is fertilize a dry soil. This is sort of synthetic fertilizers, which are, they have soluble salts in them, basically, that provide the nutrients. And if you put a salt onto a drier soil or a liquid fertilizer, which are often, tinted blue or some green, you can actually burn those tender roots because they... through osmosis, any moisture in the root system is being drawn back out into the dry soil in that solution. So whenever you fertilize, whether it be a houseplant or outdoors, make sure that your soil is moist or wet, then fertilize, and then you're good to go. It wouldn't hurt to do some fertilization in a situation like this, but otherwise with bigger trees, I'm not a big believer in. I've run into issues with that. We're over-fertilizing, the growth is too fast, and it's weak, and then you suffer damage down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so a good balance,
Yep. We were just talking about trees the other day on the show, and we were talking about birch, and... bronze birch borer, people were having troubles with it, and the guest suggested against do not fertilize The research shows that fertilizing the birch really works against, makes it worse.
Right.
Because it's getting fertilizer, it's getting nutrients that it's not used to getting. And it's so the growth it affects the growth, which then actually creates more problems. It grows unnaturally fast.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, we're big believers at the garden, all the gardening staff, myself, you know, provide very healthy conditions for the plant, just normal conditions through the season. You know, and the soil is so important, you know, the moisture levels, the nutrient levels, but don't overdo it. Just try to keep a night in that mulch, nice organic mulch is a good way to provide that on a nice steady basis. And so, you know, a little care all the, you know, all the way along is a lot better than stressing your plants out and then trying to do something really good for them and, you know, over-fertilizing them and doing more damage than good.
Ember, in Wasika, I believe. Is that correct?
Wasaki.
Oh, Wasaki, sorry.
Marinette County.
Yes.
I have a vine question. We tore down an old barn, but I talked them into saving the silo, and I would like to plant some vines around it just for pretty.
Yeah.
It would be on the west and northwest sides, and I would like some suggestion on what might be good.
Okay. Well, the first thing you want to do when you select a vine is you need to know how that vine attaches itself to grow vertically, right? So some some vines have twining petioles of the leaves that grab on to, say, like a chain link fence or, you know, an open weave structure, or have little tendrils that do that. And there's other vines, you know, that will actually have like little suction cups that will hold on. So something like Boston ivy or Virginia creeper, so to speak. Climbing hydrangea is another one that grabs that way. So if it's a silo, I assume that you're not putting sort of a trellis work on it or anything like that. Is that right? You want it to just grab on and go.
It's the very old silo. It looks like it's got these cable things about every 2.5 to 3 feet.
Is it a wood one?
No.
It's black.
It was probably the first one after the wooden one.
Oh, okay. Wow, cool. Sounds beautiful.
It's old. It's neat.
Okay, so you want a clinging vine is what we often say. So something that will grab on. So like those two I mentioned, Boston ivy.
Are they non-toxic? We have grandkids and pets and.
As far as I know, they are. Yeah.
Renegade sheep.
As far as I know, they are. I don't know, Marinette County, if you can grow trumpet creeper, Campsis radicans. That has a very beautiful, showy flower, and you might want to do a little research there and see if there's a cultivar out there you'll like, because that's kind of a neat vine, which is very vigorous and maybe a little too much oftentimes for the front of a house. Kind of takes it over. But
if
in your
it's
situation,
too vigorous, we'll turn the sheep out with it.
There you go.
There you go. Well, I tell you, too, that I'm on the UW-Madison campus, and there are a lot of vine-covered buildings, or there were, and Boston ivy, if you really want to get rid of it, I mean, it'll do a lot of damage to the brick. So, I mean, over time.
Typically, what happens is your mortar between your bricks deteriorates, as it will anyway.
Yeah.
And when they pull the vine off, they're pulling the deteriorated grout out, which should have been, you know, tuck pointed long ago anyway. So, you know, you often hear it damages it, but I think it's just hiding the damage. You don't see it until
that's true.
Until later.
A very, very good point. Right. So if you ever want to tear it off, keep that in mind.
right. Make sure you work some tuck pointing into the budget at that point.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much.
Sounds like it's going to be really pretty, Ember. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Judy in Green Bay. Hello.
I'm calling because a friend asked me a question that I couldn't answer, so I hope you can.
Okay.
She has grown cosmos for years, and her whole family thinks they're so lovely, and her grandson wants to use them at his wedding. And her only problem is that they tend to drop their pollen very easily and all over the place, and she thinks they'd make an ugly bouquet if the progressives get ugly. Mm-hmm. So, do you have any suggestions?
Suggestions on using cosmos? Probably not.
Yeah, is
I don't know that there's any pollen less varieties or any of that sort of thing around, to be quite honest.
Is there anything that you can use, for example, hairspray?
Oh, you mean to sort of set the pollen in place so that it wouldn't drop? That's
right.
A good question. I would contact a florist with that kind of it. You know, that's the kind of tricks that they would have up their sleeve. I'm not sure that cosmos is used very, regularly for that sort of thing. But certainly lilies are used in arrangements. Mm-hmm. And there they often just cut the anthers off. That'd be tough to do with cosmos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, it's interesting. Yep. Over time, we've had a lot of questions about my daughter's getting married in August or in July, and she wants a particular flower in a particular color, except that flower doesn't typically bloom at that time period, and what can you do?
Right. I always say consult your florist because they fly flowers from all over the world now. So you might be able to get them, but you might be paying a top dollar for them as well. So,
yeah, there you go. Frank in Cedarburg. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, when do you plant caladium corms in order to get them going for the spring?
If you want to do it indoors to get a jump on the season, you could probably start in late March. Get them going. Just the caller earlier had dahlias. It's the same sort of thing. Put them in a moist soil, but not wet. Warm up the soil a little bit so that they're not sitting cold and wet, which causes fungal problems.
Mm-hmm.
But once they start coming, then get them into some light, and then you can transplant them out as soon as the danger of frost is past.
Well, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And still some open lines. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Bob in Wauwatosa. Hi, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to think of spring.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
I got two questions. One is regarding two types of trees.
Mm-hmm.
And bald cypress and American chestnut in Wauwatosa. I know they're a little outside the native range of each, but I've got Minnesota-grown cultivar for the bald cypress and Upper New York State supposedly disease-resistant American chestnut. Mm-hmm. Are they likely to make it?
I would think so, yeah. We grow bald cypress without any problem at Old Brick. I see them a little farther north. I love the tree. I think it's a great, it's not necessarily native to Wisconsin, but it certainly is in Illinois and Indiana and farther, south and it's an interesting tree because it has such a huge range. I mean, it grows down in the swamps of Florida, and Louisiana, but yeah, all the way up here. So your point about getting a, northern seed source is a good one, oftentimes people don't look into that, say with red bud. That's a very good example where they get red buds that were grown down south at a chain store or something, and they don't really know where they're coming from, and they get them in the ground here, and they grow for about 3 years and find out they never bloom, because they're not hardy enough. So your approach is a good one. And American chestnut the same way.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
You bet.
Thanks, Bob. Jessica and St. Nazians. Thank you for calling. Hi. Jessica, are you there? Maybe we lost her. Let's go to a question from Rod in Gilman. He wants to prune some grapes, and he's wondering if he should do it sooner or later.
Well, I always like to prune as close to spring and ensuing new growth as possible. So, if you don't have a whole vineyard full, and time's a consideration, I would wait yet until March, later in the month or early April, and do it then. That's a good time.
Good time. And if you go to the Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store online, There's a great extension publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Talks a lot about all the different aspects of growing grapes, including pruning. And yeah. I've recommended that to a number of people who've come back to me and said, boy, I'm glad you recommended that. I really, really helped. So,
yeah, no, that is good. And, you know, they're always up on the newest cultivars, whether they be hardier, more disease resistant, whether you're growing, you know, grapes or tomatoes or whatever. And you're right. I go to those people all the time because they're out there doing it, and they're on top of the latest and greatest varieties and such.
Fred in Menominee, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call.
Well, glad to be on, Larry. Not much time, so I'll go fast. I've got... Are you there?
Yep, we're there.
Yeah, okay. I'm up in Menominee. I've got some pines around the house, and there's always the squirrels always plant some, you know, because they eat the seeds. So about October, I go out and I dig one up and I bring it in the house. It's a quote Charlie Brown Christmas tree.
Yeah,
just a tradition. I've noticed the last couple of years that about this time, and I put it in a pot, so it's in the spring I plant it out. About this time of year, I get a white, cottony type thing on the branches. And I'm just wondering what would happen if I put the plant, pot and all, out on my back deck, which obviously is not heated, it's out in the elements. I don't think it would harm the pine tree, would it, to freeze at this point? Because it's been in the house at 65.
Yeah, it might. I mean, you know, a temperate zone plant like white pine really needs a dormancy. There's actually internal hormones in the plant that break down to break down the dormancy of the plant. But anyway, and those are triggered by cold, period. You're bringing that plant in October when it's wanting to go dormant.
Yeah.
And then you're leaving it nice and warm up until now. If you just plunge that out into this cold temperatures, I would guess you might kill it. Now, if you have a cool porch that you can put it in where it's just above freezing, or an attached garage, something like that, that would be a better option. You know, if you think about fall, I mean, it's a very gradual process, right?
Yeah.
Until they go dormant. And a lot of people think, well, the pines don't go dormant. They still got leaves. But they are dormant, of course. All the buds are set and the foliage is around. So if you're going to try it, I'd try to do it in a more gradual way for best results.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Jeff, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. The time flew.
Yes, it did. Always does, Larry.
Always does. And he'll be back. Jeff Ebbing, Director of Horticulture at Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. It's a wonderful garden. I hope you have a chance to visit Old Brick Botanical Gardens in Madison. I'm a member of that society there and really enjoy it. And enjoy having you with us. And stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.